here today with Jonathan Gold, the LA Weekly food critic and 2007 Pulitzer Prize winner. Jonathan, thank you for joining us here today.
Nice to be here.
You're from South Los Angeles, correct?
I am.
How did growing up in South Los Angeles influence you when it comes to your work?
I'm not sure that being from South LA in particular influenced me. I grew up in a very mixed neighborhood, African-American, white, and Asians. There were a lot of Japanese at the time. There was that feeling that that's the way a city should look and that's the way things should be.
What was the LA food scene like when you were growing up, and has it changed?
It's always difficult to say what scenes were like when you were growing up because I did not come from a wealthy family. You know, my mom was a librarian and my dad was a probation officer. When we ate out, it was more likely to be a place like Sizzler or some Chinese restaurant in Fairfax. The restaurant scene in Los Angeles has just become exponentially different in the last 30 years. It was very white bread before. Fried chicken restaurants were thick on the landscape. It was the time that a lot of the great fast food chains were being incubated. Mexican cooking wasn't Mexican cooking like we see it now, but it was Mexican-American cooking cooked by people maybe two or three generations removed from Mexico. Chinese restaurants were being cooked by, you know, second and third generation Chinese. Things didn't really start to change until after the Immigration Act of 1965 started really to take effect. And in the 70s, especially, you started seeing people come to LA from all parts of the world that hadn't come here before. The city just expanded in these sort of marvelous and unpredictable ways.
Around USC, a lot of people are calling it the food desert. What's your opinion on that, and could it change, or will it change, or is it changing?
It depends what you mean by food desert. I tend to distrust that whenever it comes up. When people talk about food desert, there's a lot of stuff to eat within a mile of campus. I think you just have to go and take advantage of it. I'm thinking, for example, of the La Paloma complex, which is on Grant Street. You have a Peruvian slash Japanese restaurant that's good enough to have made its proprietor a Food and Wine Best New Chef this year, which is usually the kind of honor that goes to people who are the head chefs at incredibly elaborate restaurants like Spago, right? You have Chichen Itza, which is an astonishingly good Yucatecan restaurant. There's a decent Oaxaca juice stand. There's a place called Vista Hermosa that has very tolerable food from the Michoacan. And we're just talking about like one complex. You go any direction, you walk into a place, and it's a place that might make you feel a little bit uncomfortable, or you don't know the people, or you're not sure how you're going to be received, but there's nothing to be lost by walking in.
Do you think that your reviews have helped people within Los Angeles and also the greater California area branch out in their culinary experience?
I've always said the one thing that I really wanted to do was to get people in Los Angeles to be less afraid of their neighbors. I've worked at this consciously and sometimes not consciously. For example, after the riots in 92, I wrote about restaurants in the affected zones for, I think, 10, 12 weeks in a row. I didn't tell anybody I was doing it. I just did it. They're people. They live in your city. There's no reason people should be afraid of them. I think I do help people live in the entire city they live in rather than be confined to their neighborhoods. You know, they can always have my book or some printouts or the latest edition of 99 Essential Restaurants in their glove compartment. They're driving along the freeway and they'll see an exit for, you know, Norwalk. And wow, I've never thought about Norwalk. What do I do in Norwalk? They get off the freeway and I tell them a Thai restaurant to go to, and they're there, and maybe they'll get some chocolate milk at the dairy next door. Maybe they'll see the marvelous architecture of City Hall there, and maybe they'll know something about Norwalk they didn't know before. My column can be an impetus to get people to get out of the house. Anytime people get out of the house, it's good.
Do you see any younger, newer generation people doing what you're doing, or do you think that it's something that really needs to be learned?
Well, it does need to be learned. If somebody has never been to a Salvadoran restaurant before, what they have to tell you about the Salvadoran restaurant and their one exit, in their one experience in a Yelp paragraph or something, is often not very interesting. If you've been to 10 Salvadoran restaurants, you're able to put it in some kind of perspective, that's more interesting. If you've been to 200 and you're able to place it pretty precisely, then that can be really interesting. By that, I'm not saying it's absolutely necessary. A lot of my greatest antagonists are like Taiwanese engineers or graduate students who have very, very specific ideas about who food should taste. They have very specific ideas about, say, you know, spicy Chinese beef noodle soup. Whatever I say is wrong. If I agree with them, then they'll decide to disagree with me the next day. If I say this place is good, they'll say no, that place is over. And you can't win that battle in certain ways. It doesn't, if I'm talking from a universal aesthetic standpoint, does it matter that they've had this particular beef noodle soup at 100 different places and that they grew up with their mom cooking it, as opposed to me having had it maybe at 30 different places and not having a mom cook it? It's a different way of looking at things.
What are your favorite restaurants or places to eat in Los Angeles?
Oh, that's an unfair question.
I know.
I think that the restaurants in the Moza complex are astonishingly good. The pizzeria has the best pizza in the United States. There's the Moza to go where you can get the pizza to go, but they also have focaccia like on Mondays, which is best focaccia anywhere. It's just astonishingly good. They're always doing like a couple of different things that you can't get in the pizzeria. There's the Osteria, which is the main restaurant, which has more formal Italian food with the sort of bent for the dishes from the sort of the rich regions of Emilia-Romagna, the sort of butter-rich and cream-rich pastas, all fresh-made, very nice. A lot of dishes from Umbria, where the chef Nancy Silverton likes to hang out. There's a really good guinea hen dish if you're like into guinea hens with liver sauce. It's a really good guinea hen with liver sauce. And then there's a separate mozzarella bar within that where Nancy Silverton is most nights making things out of mozzarella. Those are all really good. It's almost like a sushi bar, except she's doing one cheese instead of sushi. It's a strange concept to explain, but the food's often very good. And the place in the middle, they do these whole animal dinners. Like they'll do whole goat. They do whole pig, I think, every Saturday. Sometimes they'll do like a bird meal. You almost don't have to leave that corner. I mean, it's a good corner to eat in. I always go back to Golden Deli. I always go back to Pine Burger because it makes me happy in some ways that are very hard to explain. There are 500 really remarkable Chinese restaurants, so it's hard to pick a single one. I've been going to Beijing Pie House lately that has, I guess, Beijing-style meat pies. I mean, like you'd figure from the name, but very good. These sort of pastries with lamb inside that are baked. If you don't watch out, like hot jets of lamb juices will like jet out over your shoulder and bite into them. Sea Harbor has great dim sum and really great, very high-end Cantonese seafood. Newport Seafood that has these giant lobsters that are basically flash fried with chili and scallions and garlic. And there's not a single dish in town that'll make you happier than that. I could go on for 10 hours on Chinese food.
I think you're making me hungry right now.
It's my job.
If there is something you would want to see more of in Los Angeles, what would it be?
The thing that I wish there was more of in Los Angeles, sort of really good middle-class Italian restaurants of the type that are pretty common in places like Providence or Chicago. We've never had a huge Italian community, so we don't tend to have those. New York City has more interesting African restaurants than we do, and the sheer variety and quality of African cooking is something that's I would like to explore more that we don't have here so much. Eastern Europe and Central Europe are sort of unrepresented. Although I would say that Warszawa, the Polish restaurant in Santa Monica, is at least as good as any of the Polish restaurants in New York or Chicago, places with, you know, 20 times our Polish population. We're starting to see fewer and fewer like real French restaurants, real like people's French restaurants, where things are done really well as opposed to sort of like tourist trap level food. Although I'm happy to see the Italianification of California cuisine, it'd be nice to see some French stuff sneak back in too.
Do you think the economy's had an impact on that?
The economy has had a huge impact on that. I was reviewing a few weeks ago it's a tremendous restaurant called Rivera near Staples Center that had done for a concept as a restaurant within a restaurant. They had the menu doing the dishes from the restaurant that the chef had run in the 1980s called Saint Estephe, which was the first, I guess, modern Southwest restaurant in the United States. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we take for granted now, like meat rubbed with chilies, blue corn tortilla chips, plate painting, or a bunch of other things that he was really the first person to do in his restaurant in a Manhattan Beach strip mall, you know, the kind of place that I think now has a Olive Garden. He was serving these dishes. It was like a blast from the 80s. The thing that was funny is he was using Xeroxes of the old menus from like 1987, and the prices hadn't changed. So it's like, wow, people were paying $34 for a steak at a nice restaurant in 1987, and that's still expensive for a steak now. But prices of everything else have doubled. The kind of money that's needed to sustain a restaurant on the very highest level, or a French restaurant on the very highest level, just isn't there. I don't know if we could sustain something like a Danielle in New York or a Le Bernardin that depends on whatever, 300 or 400 or 500 people coming through a day with $150, $200 average check. I think we're making do. I think the small plates thing is a really good trend. The idea that you can go out to dinner and not spend an absolute fortune and still eat really interesting, really well-sourced, sustainable, thought-through food. I guess it would be nice to see some of the other, but there's something that feels almost evil about spending $1,100 for lunch anyway.
If you could say one thing to all the foodies out there, what would you say to them?
Pay attention.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.